Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit. Bandwidth for the Tech Guy is provided by CacheFly. CacheFly.com. Hi, this is Leo Laporte, and this is my Tech Guy podcast. This show originally aired on the Premier Networks on Sunday, April 8th, 2018. This is episode 1478. The Tech Guy podcast is brought to you by 23andMe, a personal genetic service helping people understand their DNA. Buy your 23andMe kit today at 23andMe.com/twit. And by TurboTax Live, new from TurboTax. Now you can get a personal review of your tax return with a CPA or EA right on your screen. Talk with a tax expert as often as you need for tax advice to help you file with confidence. Go to TurboTaxLive.com/TechGuy. And by Rocket Mortgage from Quicken Loans. Home plays a big role in your life. That's why Quicken Loans created Rocket Mortgage. It lets you apply simply and understand the entire mortgage process fully, so you can be confident you're getting the right mortgage for you. Get started at rocketmortgage.com/tech guy. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the Tech Guy. Time to talk computers and the internet, home theater, digital photography, smartphones, smartwatches, all that jazz. 8888 Ask Leo. Let me just try this. Echo, announce the Tech Guy's on the air. Now, I was nice. I could have said the A-L-E-X-A word and triggered all of your echoes, but I only triggered those who have renamed their trigger word to Echo. That's a new feature in Amazon's Echo. I like it. And it really, I think it's exactly targeted towards, hey kids, dinner's ready, come here. If you have multiple Echoes in the house, there's an announcement feature now that will have them all say the same thing. Anyway, I really should have just used the A word and triggered Echoes all over the country. That would have been something. Would have also triggered the ire of people all over the country. So decided not to. 8888 Ask Leo is the phone number. 888-827-5536. That's toll free from anywhere in the U.S. or Canada. So feel free to call. Cost you nothing. Actually, cost you nothing anywhere in the world. You just use Skype out or something like that. And that should be a free call to 888-827-5536. Apparently, Google Home does this, too. There's a broadcast feature which rings a dinner bell. Or I guess you could say something, too. Now, see, that's what my mom would have done. When I was a kid, she got tired of shouting upstairs, get out here, dinner's ready. So she bought a little bell that she rang when dinner's ready. And for some reason, anytime I hear a bell now, my mouth waters. That seems like she programmed me somehow. Oh, boy. Intel has found a new way to fix bad bugs. Oh, this is a good idea. So another bug from Intel, this isn't going to hit most people. Intel makes a little computer. They call it NUC. Yuck, yuck, yuck. It stands for nothing. New unit of computing. Like, that's telling you something. But what it is it's a little computer the size of a hockey puck. And people use these NUCs to connect, to their TV for home theater, stuff like that. And so Intel very cleverly thought, oh, I know what we'll do. We'll make an app called Remote Keyboard. You'll put it on your phone, iOS or Android, and you won't have to attach a keyboard to the NUC. The NUC is attached to the TV, and then you could use your Intel Remote Keyboard app as a mouse and a keyboard, turn your phone sideways, because you already have that. This is the future, right? Is everything is going to be on the phone. Your phone is going to be your ultimate doodad that can do anything. Seemed like a good idea. Then they found out that the app, which has been out for almost 3 years, has a critical flaw in it that allows anyone on the network to put in keystrokes as if they're a local user. Type on your NUC. I don't know how bad that is, although they gave it a score of 9 out of 10, which is pretty serious. There were other problems are maybe more serious, though. They also revealed that an authorized local attacker, that means somebody who's actually on your network legitimately, could execute arbitrary code as an administrator on the NUC. Well, that's serious. Anyway, Intel decided, you know, we're not going to fix it. We're just going to yank it. Too bad they can't do that with the chips that have all this flaws, the Intel Spectre and Meltdown flaws and others. They can't just yank the chips, I guess. But they're going to yank the... That's it. Nah, we're not going to make that anymore. It's too hard to fix. Really? Really? It's too hard to fix? Fairly popular program's been out for 3 years. Yeah, it's too hard to fix. Unbelievable. Actually, we were going to discontinue it anyway, they said. It's not related to the security advisory. We were going to do that anyway. Yeah, I meant to do it. Isn't that what the kids say? I meant to do that. That wasn't a mistake. I did that on purpose, says Mark Zuckerberg. Oh, I'm sorry. I won't bring Mark Zuckerberg up again today. Although, you know, you could write a generic Mark Zuckerberg apology. Now, he's going to be testifying in front of Congress this week. Apparently, he's treating this like the presidential candidate would treat a debate. He's got surrogates in at the Facebook headquarters peppering him with questions. He's practicing. He's rehearsing. Oh, boy. What about just going there and telling the truth? Yeah, I can't do that now. What was I thinking? Bad mistake. Can't do that. No. Got to carefully phrase everything, shape everything, deliver the message. Stay on point, Mark. Focus. Don't get caught in any, you know, mischief. You could write a generic apology now for Mark because Mark's been apologizing exactly the same way for 14 years since he was a Harvard freshman, even before he wrote Facebook, when he wrote an apology in the Harvard newspaper, The Crimson. He had written a program. If you saw the Social Network movie, you saw this. He wrote a program called Face Mash. He scraped pictures of Harvard students from the Harvard website. You know, scraped them means you just copied them, stole them, borrowed them. I'm going to give them back. I'm just borrowing them. I didn't do it. I didn't mean to do it. He scraped those pictures off the website and put up. This is reprehensible, but he's a freshman, right? What does he know? 17, 18 years old. What does he know? He put up a website where you would rate each person at Harvard on whatever score of 1 to 10 for sexiness. Face Mash. Hot or Not. It was a direct copy, actually, of a site that is now gone, thank goodness, called Hot or Not, where people would vote on somebody's appearance. I mean, how shallow can you get, right? And, well, there was some uproar. So this is the apology that he published in the Harvard Crimson. I hope you understand, says Mark Zuckerberg, 18-year-old Mark. This is not how I meant for things to go. I apologize for any harm done as a result of my neglect to consider. It wasn't really my fault. I didn't consider how quickly the site would spread and its consequences thereafter. I definitely see how my intentions could be seen in the wrong light. You could just reuse that. In fact, wait a minute. He has every year for the last 15 years since 2003. And I expect something similar when he testifies in front of Congress, the Commerce Committee, later this week. I didn't mean it. I didn't know that would happen. I'm sorry. And then he does, and then he says, "We'll fix this. It's not going to happen again." And it always happens again. We'll fix this. I'm a little disappointed by Apple. Their top of the line Macintosh computer is the Mac Pro. Feels like I bought the Mac Pro right about when Facebook started. Remember that? But they really were proud of this. In fact, if you go to the Apple site, they're still proud of it. Still got a beautiful website for the Mac. It's a shiny aluminum cylinder. Oh, what did they call it? They said innovation my keister. Innovation my butt. When they showed, we can innovate. See, look at this. And then they never did anything else. They never updated it. Never even put a newer processor in. Never did anything. Kept selling it for thousands of dollars. I feel a little robbed. I bought it and, you know, okay. Then last year they said, oh, we're sorry. We admit it. We're sorry. We designed it. It couldn't be upgraded. Thermal considerate. We couldn't. You can't. No. So we're going to start over, but we won't have a new Mac Pro this year. Now we've learned another press conference, brought in tame journalists and told them, oh, next year, 2019. But we're, oh, it's going to be good. Look, come here. See, we've got professionals. They have been looking in little offices, testing software and hardware so we can make something they want. But it's going to take us another year. Ay, ay, ay. We're sorry. This is the apology tour. We're sorry. We didn't do it. Not my fault. 8888 Ask Leo, the phone number. Let's take a break. Heather's, it's Kim Schaffer. She's here. She's answering the phone. She's ready. I know Heather hasn't been here in years. She's ready. She's going to take your call, and we'll take your call next. You know, I never thought about that. But you two must have stolen C.W. McCall's drum lick. Hey, Kim Schaffer.
Good morning.
How are you?
Awesome.
I'm in fine fettle today, but I'm coming home any day now.
Fine fettle. I'm going to have to look that one up.
You're in fine fettle, sir. So here we go. We got some calls, I'm sure, right? I hope.
Yeah. Veronica in Aptos heard you last week touch on the new cell phone study.
Yes.
And I think she has a few questions
Good.
About that.
So do we.
Yeah, and I said, I don't know, maybe he's found out more this week, but
so
we'll,
do we.
We'll find out.
Veronica, thank you, Kim. Veronica Aptos, Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi, Leo. I was listening to your show yesterday. I was driving through the desert. It was a recorded podcast, and you guys were talking about cell phones and the studies they had done on rats.
Yeah.
And what I was wondering, if I have my phone in airplane mode, and the Wi-Fi off, and I'm just using like some offline apps, is that any safer?
Yes, absolutely. So what they're talking about...
At night, I like to listen... I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Yeah, you want to listen at night and...
Right.
Or, you know, yeah. Yeah, so what they're talking about, and this... I still, you know, there's many, many questions about this. The FDA has not made a recommendation. This is a study that was done by the National Toxicology Project, which is a part of the National Institutes of Health. So it's the U.S. government. So, and it was a, I think, a very carefully planned study of how rats and mice would react to cell phone radiation. You know, scientists really want to know. If the radio flying through the air, which has been flying through the air since the 20s of all different kinds, how dangerous that is. We've always thought the cell phone radiation was non-ionizing, so not enough energy to hurt your cells. And never have we found conclusive evidence of any kind that it did. And there have been many, many tests. Well, this is the first time, and the initial test came back kind of, as I mentioned last week, I want to say it again so everybody understands, came back equivocal,
right.
Which means they couldn't find a direct connection, but they seemed like there might be some evidence, but it was hard to say definitely. And then a weird thing happened. There's a peer review process where they get a bunch of scientists together to review the study, and they did something they never do. They upgraded it from equivocal to clear evidence. They said,
right.
No, we looked at your study. There's clear evidence here. In one case, that the cell phones caused tumors in the hearts of male rats, not female, which to me is a little weird. But, you know, the whole thing is, I think, needs a little bit more study. And I'm sure that's what's going to happen. But they passed this along to the FDA. The FDA now has the opportunity to make some recommendations.
Does that apply? Because I don't know anything about the different types of waves, but if I use the Wi-Fi calling at home and I turn off the cellular when I'm just at home and just use my Wi-Fi, is that any safer or does that not apply? Or is it all the same?
In this particular study, they were testing not even LTE. They were testing 3G cell phone radios. If you turn off your cell phone, if you're in airplane mode and even with Wi-Fi on, that there's no study about that. I mean, there's no evidence in any studies that have been made, and this study did not cover it. It covered only a particular kind of radiation coming off the cell phone radio. So yeah, wireless, you know, Wi-Fi isn't, but that doesn't, which is not to say it's safe. It's just to say it hasn't, there's no evidence it's not.
That's what I thought, and that's what I wanted to clarify. And also, too, if I turned off the Wi-Fi, put it in airplane mode, and then listen to my offline apps, like my, I listen to like these nighttime kind of relaxing
right.
sounds when I'm sleeping, but not keep it, still keep it.
Yeah, I do that too.
If
yeah.
I have my headphones in and I have like it about 2 or 3 feet away, that's probably okay. You think?
Yeah, yeah. With, the farther, the so next, so. So there's so. I only reported this because I feel like I owe it to everybody because I've said for years, don't worry, don't worry, don't worry. So I owe it to them to, if there's evidence that you should, you know, take some precautions mm-hmm. and you need to know
it. I appreciate
it.
That, too.
It hasn't changed my behavior at all.
Right.
But you probably, it would be prudent not to sleep on your cell phone with sure. it turned on in full blast. It, you know, move it the farther away and even a little distance attenuates the signal hugely. So farther away it goes, the better. If you turn off radios, of course, that eliminates that. But which isn't to say, you know, maybe there's, we don't, you know, they haven't, you can't test for everything and you can't prove the negative. So there's, you know, there's no yeah. test that says that the Wi-Fi is dangerous, but there are plenty of people who think it is. Thinking doesn't yeah. make it so. No. So I think it's a minor danger, if any, to be honest.
Okay.
So.
Okay. But it's good to know, and it's good just to be aware
yeah,
of it.
Yeah, be aware of it. The guy who designed the study, who has since retired, he designed it in 2009. It's been going on for a while, said he would recommend using wired headphones. And that gets the phone away from you. But then I've seen other people say, well, yeah, but except the depends what it is that's harmful. But if it's radio frequency waves, that wire just conducts them right into your ear. So the problem is these tests are with rats in very unusual situations. They were in like tanning beds, basically, where the cell phone radiation was like a tanning bed firing at them. And they would do, I think, 8 hours on, 8 hours off. And so, yeah, the prudent thing would be to do exactly what you're doing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, because it's still early. This technology is still early. We've only been using cell phones like this for like 10 years, really. You know, these smartphones, right?
Yeah.
So
I think if there were a really strong connection between this and cancer, we'd see a significant rise in cancers, which we have not. So by now, even, because it's been, 10 years since the iPhone came out. So the smartphones, but we've been using cell phones for 10 years, 20 years before that. If there really were a problem, I think you'd see some statistical evidence, which we don't see. So, yeah, it's prudent. Be prudent. Put it, yeah. And you know what? It's good for you to put it away at night anyway. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. I think brain cancers actually have gone down. The one thing that did change, I guess, is that we don't have external antennas anymore. I don't know if that means, if that's good or bad. I don't know if that means this stuff is worse than it was. I don't know anything. Let me talk about genetics. I know a little bit about that. I know about my genetics. Actually, that's the best book ever written. The Story of You. What if you could just spit into a little plastic vial, send it in, and then they would write a 75-report book just about you? That's what 23andMe does. It's a genetic testing service. I did it when they first started several years ago. It was so much fun. And what's neat is they've got the genetic material. There's enough in a little bit of spit. They don't have to draw blood. You don't have to go to a doctor or anything. Just spit in a little vial. To do the genetic maps so that you can actually download the raw data if you want. But then what happens over time is we learn more and more about genetic markers, about what this allele means, what that means. They learn more and more. For instance, since I did it, in 2010, they finally got sampled Neanderthal DNA. They thought there was no interbreeding between humans and Neanderthals at all until 2010. When they found enough, I guess it was a Neanderthal bone or something, they found enough DNA in it to analyze it. And now, since then, 23andMe has added this report because even though I didn't spit into a vial again, they had my whole genetic map and they said, oh, Leo, you're 4% Neanderthal. So as they learn more all the time, it's so cool. 23andMe has both health and wellness reports and ancestry reports. Ancestry is really interesting. You learn about where your people came from a couple hundred years ago, but even tens of thousands of years ago, the migration path of your ancestors. It's great, too, with kids because you can look at this stuff and they learn how genetics, you know, the 23 pairs of chromosomes you get from your mom and your dad. There's a DNA relative finder tool that lets you connect with new relatives with their permission and yours. I just think this is so cool. You learn a lot. It's fun. And there's more all the time coming in. 23andMe.com/twit is the address. That way they'll know you heard it here. And it supports the Tech Guy podcast. 23andMe.com/twit. It was a great gift for Christmas. I gave it to my mom and my sister. I've mentioned this before. And then my sister liked it so much. She got a report back. We're messaging back and forth. We shared our data. And then she bought it for my dad. Lisa, I bought it for Lisa. I think Lisa's bought it for her son. It's going to spread like this. It's so cool. Because the more you connect, the more you know. It's the story of you. 23andMe.com/twit. Wonderful gift. Fun project. Great way to learn. And what better book than the story of you, right? 23andMe.com/twit. Odds me my DJ days. 52 degrees in the city. It's the Quiet Pineapple Express. And the smooth sounds of Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888. Ask Leo. That's the phone number. 888-827-5536. Hey, if I mention something and you disagree with it or you want to know more about it or you want to click a link or whatever, I should mention we put everything up on the website, techguylabs.com. In fact, I'll put a link to the National Toxicology Program study of cell phone radio. You might want to read about that. I'll put that link up from quartz.com. I think the publication is also available. We'll put that up. And that's at techguylabs.com. So you go there, you can find all the stuff we talk about. It's free, by the way. There's no sign up even. You just go. There's a good search. You can find anything you want. If you wish, though, to disagree with me, I can't imagine why. But if you do, there's no need to shout at the radio. I can't hear you. And it just makes your blood pressure spike. So just go to the website, techguylabs.com. You can leave a comment there. We divide it up into show, each show into hour, each hour into call or segment. And that way you can go right to the part that you disagree with. And you know, I appreciate it, frankly, because the more we get, more input we get, more opinions, more thoughts, the more valuable that site is. How many shows are there now? 1,478 shows. And audio and video of the shows after the fact, too. So you can read the question and answer. You can listen to the question and answer. You can watch the question and answer. Look at that. Melanie, Irvine, California. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Melanie.
Hi, how are you?
I'm wonderful. How are you?
Oh, I'm going along. I have another problem. I called you a few weeks ago multiple times.
Oh, I remember talking to you. Yeah. You're the one who went to the door of Google Irvine and pounded on it saying, fix my Gmail. And yet, yeah, you got it fixed.
Yep.
Not that I recommend that, by the way.
No.
That's not how she got it fixed.
No.
Nobody's there.
Anyhow, my problem now is I was having some problems, and a friend of mine recommended this Russian guy, said, oh, have him look at your computer. He'll, you know, make sure everything's okay. And so he said, I have these viruses, which I don't know if I had them or not, removed them. But then I went to get on a meeting last week. I have no webcam.
Oh, and he removed more than the virus, didn't he?
Yeah. And so I tried to go.
Now, wait a minute. Where did this Russian guy, was he like a, did he like have a storefront or was just in his house or where was this guy?
No. It was a friend of mine actually from church that recommended him and said, he has a big time job with computers and everything.
Good.
He'll do a great job.
So he's probably fine. So yeah, he's a geek. He's your neighborhood geek. People do that to me, too. They come over after church and I have to fix their computers. It's great fun. So the problem with the local geek is sometimes I don't know what it is about geeks. We think we know more than we do.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe can overestimate our skills with a Z. And on the other hand, I think there are many, many great people out there who do know a little bit of thing or two and do like to help people because normal, you know, everyday users, it's murder out there. Computer companies, as you know, don't give you much help. And it's complicated stuff. And if you, you know, if you're trying to learn the piano and you can get somebody to a concert pianist to show you how, well, that's all well and good. But as I said, sometimes these geeks come in and they, and I bet you, he comes and sits down and goes, okay, we're going to do this. Okay, it's fixed. Bye. See ya. And then you go, oh, well, see ya. Bye. Thank you. And your camera doesn't work or something. And, and that's, yeah, that's not unusual either. So he, why would your camera, and what program do you use your camera with? Skype?
Yeah, and then I use it, let's see, it's...
What did it fail with?
I'm sorry?
What did it fail with? Were you doing a meeting, a GoToMeeting or Zoom?
Yes, I went to get on a meeting with Zoom, and everybody's going, we can't see you.
Yeah.
And I'm going, why can't you see
me? So there's a couple of things, and it's a Windows machine?
Yes.
Okay, so there's a couple of things to do. I mean, chances are what he did was go in there and remove stuff that, you know, the problem with removing malware is sometimes malware will glom onto things, and so you remove the thing it glommed onto. You know, it's like an alien when those face suckers get on your face. To take them off could also have some long-lasting consequences. So it's kind of like that. It's also, he may have, for instance, removed all your browser extensions. Zoom, the way Zoom works, when you have a Zoom meeting, you go to the Zoom website, and it downloads a little thing, a little program, right?
Mm-hmm. Right.
And you install that program, and then it attaches, and you may have to do settings to say where the sound is coming from and where the picture is coming from and all that.
Mm.
So he may have seen something in there that he removed. It's hard to say. What you really want to do is see if you can see if the camera works at all with anything.
No, it's not even on there. I looked under devices.
So here's the thing. You have a program in Windows. Mm-hmm. Is Windows 10?
Yeah.
Yeah. So there's a program called Camera that you just start, and you can just see that. That's the Windows program that attaches to your camera. And if it says, I don't see a camera, okay, now we know what's wrong. It has nothing to do with Zoom. So try that. So that's the first thing to do, because what we got to do is figure out, well, what's not working? Is it Zoom? Maybe. Is it the camera itself? Maybe. Maybe it's a driver. Mm-hmm. So, you know, he may have, here's my problem. I'm not a fan of going in there and removing, quote, malware and saying, hey, you're good to go, because you don't know what happened. It's just like that movie Alien. You know, they took the face sucker off the guy, but what they didn't realize is the alien had laid an egg inside him, and then, you know, a couple of days later, boom. So that's kind of like that with your computer. The guy might have cleaned off the outside, but you don't know what's inside, and he doesn't either, because there's no way to tell if a bad guy really did get in your system. There's all sorts of invisible things he could have done.
Okay.
So usually when people get malware and they really think there's something wrong with it, there's levels of things that could be wrong. I tell people you should really wipe the drive and reinstall Windows. That's the only way to be sure you've gotten rid of it. Now, I'm just saying that as a sideline, because we're going to see if we can fix your camera. Maybe what he found wasn't malware. Maybe it was just like a browser plug-in that isn't very good, or, you know. So he removed some stuff.
I typed in camera, and it says we can't find your camera.
Good. So we did the diagnostic, and now that means Windows doesn't see your camera. And that kind of confirms what you were saying, because it sounds like you looked in the device manager. I'm projecting here.
Correct.
You did. Oh, nice. So you can do that. You hit Windows key X, and you typed and you tap the device manager, and it shows all the installed stuff. So you don't see a camera there, which is interesting. It would, on my machine, it shows up under imaging devices, but you don't.
No
entry for imaging devices.
Nope.
Okay. And I presume that he and you probably have restarted the computer since this happened.
Yes. Okay. Multiple times.
Because normally what will happen is Windows will say, oh, I see the hardware for a camera, but you don't have a driver. You don't have anything installed for it. So they call this plug and play. I'm going to install a driver for it. The idea is you plug in a new device and it goes, ooh. Is the camera separate or is it built into your computer?
No, it's a built-in. It's an all-in-one HP.
Okay. So the first thing to do is go to the HP site. They have HP.com has a drivers section. And download all of the drivers, the motherboard drivers. It won't necessarily be a camera driver. All the drivers for that particular HP model. You'll have to search for the model. Download and reinstall those. Sometimes that fixes it. Sometimes that fixes it. There is, in that device manager window, a scan for hardware changes, which you can run under the action menu, that will look for that camera and may, in fact, find it and reinstall it. But I bet you you need an HP device driver. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. So that would be the next step. And now, if installing the device driver doesn't work... He didn't open up the computer, did he?
No.
No. Mm-mm. He did everything he did. It did at the keyboard.
Correct.
Because, you know, you can physically open the computer and disable the camera, but he obviously didn't do that.
No.
So go back to the device manager, rescan the hardware just to see if it can see it and maybe install it. But because it's HP, chances are that is a driver that comes from HP. So you can download all of the HP drivers for that exact model and reinstall. And if that still doesn't work, then I'm really puzzled about what he did. Do you think he installed security software on your computer?
I have ESET security, and he said that was a good one.
It is a good one. So he didn't install anything additional. He just, as far as you can tell, you know, it's fun. It's hard to tell because he's sitting there typing as fast as can be. But but presumably removed stuff and didn't install stuff.
Correct.
And you don't even see under imaging devices anything. It's not like you see an X or a yellow exclamation mark.
No.
You just see nothing. I'm not sure what he did. He might have downloaded a tool, which is always interesting because sometimes these tools get overly aggressive. I would try this reinstalling the HP drivers first.
Okay.
If not, the prudent thing to do is it's really this thing I always recommend, which is just, and it's easy in Windows 10. If you hit the Windows key and type recover, or recovery options, you'll see there is a way to kind of start over in the recovery control panel. And you can do it, and the first way to do this, and this is the second step after you go to HP and get the drivers.
Okay.
Go through the recovery options and reset the PC. And you'll see there's two kinds of resets. There's one that keeps your files, which is the simplest and the first one to do.
Okay.
See if that works. If it doesn't, you might have to do the remove everything setting, which means before you do that, you need to back up all your data and all that stuff.
Yeah. Okay.
You should back it up anyway. It'd probably be prudent to do that now. I'm sure you have a good backup, right?
Yeah, it's Carbonite.
Yay. Do a local backup, too, because it's faster to get it back. You don't have to download it.
Okay.
So get a USB, little thumb drive or something, and just back up all the documents you want to keep.
Okay.
So under recovery in the recovery control panel, do the reset this PC. Keep my files the first time so that way you don't have to reinstall anything. But if that doesn't work, you might have to do the second, you know, scorched earth solution.
Okay. All right.
Good luck.
I definitely try. Thanks again.
All right. See you later.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Call anytime, Melanie. I like Melanie. I love Melanie. You know, I don't know. I think remove everything is basically a clean install, but it wouldn't be, in my mind, as clean as a real clean install, which is downloading Windows from ISO of Windows from Microsoft and reinstalling that way. You could format the drive and all that stuff. Why are you yelling at me, Mike B? Why? Oh, have her show non-present devices. You think it's a hidden device? Yeah, I don't trust restore ports at all, Brett. Never use restore points. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888 Ask Leo. That's the phone number. Peter, Los Angeles is next. Hi, Peter.
Hey, Leo. How you doing, man?
Hey, Peter. I'm great. How are you?
Hey, I'm doing well. Thanks for asking. I have three really quick questions. The first one is, I was locked out of my Gmail account, as I'm sure you know, it's happened to a lot of people, just like your last caller.
It just happened to Melanie, yeah.
Yeah, it is, and she is right, man. It is a tough proposition to get back in that bad boy, but I did regain access. I have unbelievably important documentation within my email account, such as financial information, as well as a lot of personal medical information, PDF files. Is there a way for me moving forward to back up my Gmail account for all time?
Yeah. Yeah, there is. Yeah, now, there's something called, are you on a Mac or a PC?
I have both.
So on the Mac, there's something called Horcrux, which is a great name. It comes from Harry Potter. And it's a program that will run in the background on your Mac and continually back up your Gmail so that you have it all. That is a little different than using, you could use any email program and do it, but Horcrux kind of does it a little bit more efficiently and makes a database of all your emails. So that's a little simple. So I think more complete. So any email program, if you turn off IMAP and you say I want you to get the email using POP protocol, not the IMAP protocol, we'll download everything. So Gmail is a form of, not a real good form, but a form of IMAP, which means it keeps the mail on the server and your mail client is just a view into that, makes changes to it, but isn't the complete set of email. As you probably already learned when you couldn't get into your email, your mail client suddenly says, I don't see any mail.
Sure.
So if you change to a different protocol, the old fashioned, remember the old days when you'd get email, it would download it from the server, then delete it on the server, and you'd have the only copy?
Yeah,
you can use that. You can go into your Gmail settings and say, I want to, you know, give me the POP settings and use, you know, your mail client of whatever you use and download it all. The problem is Gmail rate limits it, so you can't get it all at once. So a third-party program like Horcrux will actually manually, you know, suck it all out of there. I'm going to there's also a Gmail backup program for Windows.
Okay.
It's called Gmail Backup. It may still get rate limited because, you know, Google doesn't want you to draw too much bandwidth at once. There are third-party services. I used to use Backupify, which is actually a really interesting service. Let me see if they still do Gmail.
Cool. And then while you're looking at that, I have two more quick questions.
Sure.
I know that you're a fan of the Chromebook for the layman.
Yes.
Is that safe for public use as far as Wi-Fi is concerned? In other words, like if I want to bring it to Starbucks or something of that nature.
It has the same flaws as any laptop at a public Wi-Fi, because the flaw is that you're communicating on a public network. And so somebody has access to your network. It is more protected in some senses. A bad guy can't easily or at all really inject anything into that computer. And if they did, it's easy to power wash it. But really the threat of Wi-Fi mostly is that somebody will snarf your traffic as it's floating through the air.
Mm-hmm.
And that any computer you use is going to have the same problem with. That's why people use VPNs. The good news is most of the stuff we do these days, frankly, because of this, is encrypted. So when you use Facebook or Gmail, you're using, you'll even see in the browser window, HTTPS. You're using secure protocols, encrypted protocols, and that's safe. That really is safe. So as long as what you're doing is, you know, on an encrypted connection, and almost all websites now are doing that, you don't need to use a VPN. In effect, you're on a VPN, and the Chromebook is going to protect you against any more aggressive attacks. There's really weird little risks at coffee shops. People can set up something called a Wi-Fi pineapple, for instance, that can impersonate a Wi-Fi access point, get you to join it, and get you to interact with it. And even on a Chromebook, you know, you're still going to do that. They can't do much to your Chromebook, but you could still, you know, inadvertently log into something and give up your password, things like that. So
okay, cool. And then one last quick question.
Sure.
That woman that you just spoke with from Irvine, How the heck did she get access back to her Gmail account?
She did she just took her time doing it. She did what Gmail tells you to do, which is to verify. The way you get it back is to verify you are you. Of course. And the problem is that if somebody's gotten into your account, your password may not work, your recovery phone number may not work. But what Google will ask you, and you'll see if you go through this process, they'll ask you questions like, well, when did you first create your Gmail account? Tell me what emails you sent, things like that, things that only you would know in theory. It's the whole thing comes down to a problem of proving that you are you before they give it back to you. So they don't give it to somebody else. Let me tell you, all of these problems would be solved if you didn't use Gmail. Now, I recommend Gmail. I like it. It's free. It's very powerful. Google does a good job with it. But it's a free service. You don't own it, really. And you're kind of at the mercy. If you pay for email, then there's a problem. You have somebody to call. So I use a service called Fastmail, which is a paid email service. There are many. But I like fastmail.com. And if there's a problem, I can't lose my account. I call them. And they go, oh, Leo, they're Australian. Oh, Leo. Yeah, we'll connect it up again. You can't call anybody at Google because it's a free service. And they're not going to pay for real support. So if you really care about your email privacy, you should probably buy your email. You should probably pay for the service. If you don't, then you get what you get.
Yeah, no, it was just really difficult for me to get access back to my account. I did everything that you said, which is confirm me and all my information. It was really difficult. I thought maybe it was like a secret trick she was able to do.
No, she did what you did. In fact, she was complaining because she tried and tried again doing all that stuff, and it would say, you're trying too many times. It was just a mess. But honestly, that's just because it's a free service. Even if you pay for G Suite, their paid service, you will get support then, but I feel like it's not as good. It's such a big company. As if you find a good company offering email services, Fastmail is just one of many, many. And Fastmail's real IMAP, I think they have some features that I prefer. And it sounds like you're storing very private documents there. They have a file system that you can encrypt. I think it's a little safer, to be honest, than Gmail.
Okay.
I love Gmail. And I think certainly if you're going to use Gmail, using two-factor, making sure, very important, that you set a recovery phone number so that if a bad guy does hack into your account somehow, that they can call you. All of these things.
But what if you actually no longer have that phone anymore?
Right. Well, you got to keep up on all that stuff, right? That's on you, my friend.
I know. You guys are great. Thank you so much.
My pleasure.
You're the man.
Yeah. There are lots of ways to archive your Gmail. If it were me in your shoes, what I would do, I would go get a Fastmail account. You can set up Fastmail to gather all your Gmail. For a long time, I've used Fastmail for 10 years, but for a long time, I used my Gmail, and I had Fastmail get the mail from Gmail and store it at Fastmail. So I had a backup, not on my server, on Fastmail's server. I could have made another one locally. I like some of the features of Fastmail over Gmail. I was able to use it a little bit better. So, you know, we use these free services, and they're great. I mean, you know, we get a lot of value from Google and Facebook and these free services. But understand, A, you're giving them something to pay for it, usually your attention, right? Your personal information and attention, like watching ads. And secondarily, if it's free, you can't expect the same kind of full service that you'd get from a paid company. That's why I pay for my email. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Let's take a break. More of your calls right after this. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. Time to talk computers and the internet and home theater and digital photography and smartphones and smart watches and electric vehicles and augmented reality and all the gee-jaws and gizmos and gadgets of the 21st century. This is the technology show. 888-ASK-LEO, the phone number, 888-827-5536. That's toll-free from anywhere in the U.S. or Canada. And because I'm going to be going on vacation in a few weeks, we don't like to do reruns. So we're recording ahead. We record some calls ahead. I'll be doing that later this afternoon. So after the show ends, keep the phones ringing, and I'll keep answering calls. And then one of the weekends I'm gone, KTLA's Rich DeMuro will come in, as he has before, and fill in for me. He does such a great job. Too good a job, but that's okay. It's also younger and better looking. What can you do? But you're going to get fresh programming. That's the point. That's the no reruns on this show. 8888 Ask Leo. We go back to the phones. Julie in Los Angeles. Hi, Julie.
Hi. I'm actually from Santa Clarita, but I'm driving in Los Angeles. But I pulled over, so I'm safe.
Thank you for doing that.
Yeah, I have a question. I've been wanting to get Alexa for a couple years now, and my husband is really unsettled about it. He feels like if we get it, then the government or whoever else is out there is going to be listening to all of our conversation at home. Is there like a part of it that's not terribly secure and safe?
No. Well, okay, I'll give you the full rundown. There are I have many friends who are highly technical people who refuse to own any of these voice-activated devices. But let me ask you a question. Does your husband have a smartphone in his pocket?
Well, yeah, but he only got it because he had to for his baseball. If he had his choice, he would use his old flip phone because he really doesn't like the smartphones.
Well, even a flip phone, I hate to say it, has a microphone on it. And
that's true.
Almost all devices nowadays have a very highly accurate GPS locationing. They have microphones, often have cameras. And we know that law enforcement, anyway, if you're worried about the government, law enforcement can easily get access to anything coming off of that phone. I would point out, if you're worried about the government, you might have larger problems. Right?
Well, you know,
I mean, if you've made an enemy that has nuclear weapons, you might, you know, and tanks, you might just have other issues. But I understand. I said a lot about this is about feeling, right? So
yeah,
you put one of these Amazon Echoes or Google Homes in your house. It is always listening. That's the thing that scares him. It's always listening. But it's listening in an interesting way. First I'll talk about normal behavior and then what could happen. So the normal behavior is, ain't nobody got time to listen to everything you say, first of all. I mean, imagine if we lived in an environment where everybody was being monitored. It would take more people to monitor the people than there are people being monitored. It's impractical. However,
I'm not interested in what I'm doing, much less somebody else.
They don't care. However, if you did become the target of an investigation, you know, there are ways that you could use this technology against you. So let's talk about how it's normally used. The way these devices work is they do not send back anything to the home office, Google or Amazon, until you say the trigger word. And you know that. They have a word that you say that will get it going. And then as soon as you say, so what it's doing all that when it's, quote, always listening is. I can't say it out loud because it'll get everybody in the radio audience upset at me. Alexa.
Okay. Oh, well, yeah, but you have to say that every day.
Yeah, wait a minute. No, hold on. So the always listening is, there's just a little tiny processor, not a particularly bright processor, not as smart as your phone, for instance, that's always looking at the waves. That sound is waves coming into the microphone on there and matching it to that word. And actually, you can change it to Echo, Computer, and Amazon as well as the A word. On the Google Home, it's always looking for the words, okay, you know who, goo.
Yeah.
And when it hears those, in fact, if you have one in the house, every once in a while, it'll wake up and say, ah, what? Because
my son does that.
Yeah, it thinks it heard the trigger word. But nothing gets sent back to the home office until it hears that trigger word. That would use too much bandwidth, require too much effort on Amazon's part. So the little machine is waiting for the A word. Then the minute it sees that A word waveform come across, it goes, ah! And it starts keeping track of everything that comes after that for, I think, up to 2 minutes. And then it makes a connection. It's already recording that, makes a connection to the home office to Amazon and sends the recording to Amazon. And you could tell that because, so your son has one. You can look at his his Amazon Echo app on his phone, and it will actually show all the things he said. You can even listen to it. It'll show all the things he's ever said. You can listen to it and see what he said.
Uh-huh.
And so it's recording that stuff. So that is being sent back to Amazon, and then Amazon's servers will act on it. So far, nothing like that is smart enough to do it without help. It has to send it back to the home office. The home office says, oh, and sends the response back. So you're talking...
So when you say the trigger word for that amount of time, and then up to 2 minutes after that. That's the only time it's recording, and that's what you know that is
right.
being recorded.
You want it to record.
Yeah.
There
right.
is this this problem of incidental recordings where, you know, it might think it heard it, or somebody on the TV or radio activates it, and then it's sending whatever incidental sound happens after that back to the home office. And that's when, after a little bit, it says, I don't know what to do with what you just told me. I give up. What are you saying? What are you, crazy? So,
okay.
So that's the only time. Now, that's normal operation. But just like your smartphone or your computer, which has a microphone and a camera, or any other device you're carrying around, that's not to say that bad guys or the government couldn't hack in. The government, I mean, I don't know that this has ever happened, but we wouldn't know. The government has, since the Patriot Act, since 9/11, has this tool called the Patriot Act and the National Security Letter, which they can go to Amazon and say, okay, here's the deal, Amazon. We want you to turn on Julie's Echo and let us listen in. And by the way, you can't tell her. Or anybody ever. Mm-hmm. So that's part of the Patriot Act, and that keeps getting renewed. And, you know, there are a few of us that are not happy about that. But as I said, if you have trouble with the government, you may have larger problems.
No, I'm pretty benign.
I wouldn't worry about hackers. So far, we don't know of any way hackers can do that. There's okay. the theoretical possibility, but so far we don't know of any way. Now, that could end up being more of a problem. You know, there have been cameras. Especially cheap security cameras that have, for instance, a hardwired password. And once the bad guys know, they can turn on your camera and look at you. And so that's happened. That has definitely happened. There was a company called Foscam that you could search Foscams all over the world and you could see what's going on in people's houses.
Really?
Yeah.
From your computer. So that little camera on your computer at home.
Well, no, that's a little different. Although, I mean, as long as I'm scaring you, I might as well give you the full... the full scare treatment. There are things called remote access Trojans or rats, which are hacker tools. If they can get on your system, they can put a rat on your system and it can turn on the camera and the microphone. It could also control your system. You have maybe bigger problems than that because they can also see all your passwords and credit card numbers and all that stuff. So, but we know there are creeps out there who will put or attempt to put rats on, say, the computers of young girls and try to spy on them. That's really creepy and ucky, but it does happen. So this is why we talk so much about computer security. More modern computers now are coming with shutters for the cameras, which is a good thing. Oh. You can, if you choose to be paranoid, you got a lot you could be paranoid about.
Well, no, I'm not the paranoid one.
I understand. And your husband, but the point is your husband isn't really wrong. But you just have to decide, what are you going to worry about? And because your husband has a smartphone, he's already got the best spy device in the world in his pocket. Frankly, if I'm the FBI, that's the one I want. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Yeah, I mean, it's a great question because I think I understand why your husband's paranoid. But you kind of have to decide. I don't think the Echo's really a problem, especially since he's already carrying a smartphone and you have a computer. So you have to decide, is the value of it? And I think that the Echo is really, really fun to have. I use it all the time.
Yeah, I really want to get one.
And I ran out of razor blades yesterday, and instead of trying to remember, because I was shaving, I said, Echo, buy more razor blades, and it did.
Oh, my gosh.
I find that worth
crazy.
It.
Crazy.
I find that useful.
Well, is this on right now, or is this being recorded for later?
This one's on. You're on. You just were famous on the air all over
No, because my husband's listening.
Oh.
It's a good thing. He's getting all of this down.
Yeah, now he's going to come back. See, I told you. I told you, Julie. It's and take this phone. I don't want it.
You're hilarious.
Thanks, Julie. It's good to talk to you.
Thank you very much.
Take care. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Oh, bad news. A week from tomorrow. Do you know what I'm talking about? It's tax time. What is it? Actually, it's a week from, when is it? April 17th? I don't know because I don't have to worry because I got TurboTax. TurboTax is awesome. My mom, she was paying $500 a year to get her taxes done. I said, Mom, let me do it. It's now, and that because I've started doing that last year, now when I go to TurboTax, I just import all the data. I can check into her brokerage accounts or bank accounts. I get all the information imported. I am not keying numbers, nothing. It takes me 10 minutes to do her taxes. My daughter, she's in the workforce now. She said, I got a W-2. What do I do? I said, TurboTax.com. And actually, there's a new feature that I really love. In fact, I'm going to use this with Mom, called TurboTax Live. TurboTax Live, of course, you get the TurboTax, which does your taxes, but it files them online and all that stuff, state and federal. But the TurboTax Live gives you a personal review of your tax return from a CPA or an EA right on the screen. You see them. They don't see you. It's one-way video. That's nice. I like that. And you can call them as often as you need for answers or advice on your taxes, even for tax planning for 2018. That new tax law comes into effect. There's lots of changes. They know about them all. They're ready. You can even have the expert review your return before you file, make any necessary changes, so you've got the confidence that, no, this is done right. I don't have to worry about this. And Mom is always asking me questions about a return. I'm just going to get this and say, Mom, here's your expert. Because she always says, and it hurts my feelings, she says, well, honey, ask Lisa if you're doing this right. Because my wife is an EA. She studied all this stuff. Ask Lisa. Now I'm going to say, oh, no, it's better, Mom. I've got TurboTax Live. You can ask the expert yourself. And it's always backed by with a 100% accuracy guarantee. TurboTax is awesome. Tax time's coming. Connect with a TurboTax Live expert today at TurboTaxLive.com/TechGuy. TurboTaxLive.com/TechGuy. You know what? It takes all the fear. I am not kidding. And stress and anxiety out of doing your taxes. And really, that's a good thing. It's good for your health. I know we're not allowed to make health claims for TurboTax, but I think it's good for your health. TurboTaxLive.com/TechGuy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888. Ask Leo. Dobby in our chat room. Love the name, by the way. Dobby asks a question. Dobby wants to know where I'll be uploading my Japanese vacation photos. Well, Dobby, that's a good question because I've killed my Facebook account, right? So it won't be Facebook. We know that much. I don't know. How are you feeling these days? Now, I'm in an unusual situation because I overshare already. I'm on the air talking to people 5 days a week, 4 days a week. So by the time I get home, I feel like anything that anybody wants to know about me is already out there. So I don't use Twitter and Instagram and Facebook and social networks like that, probably in the way a normal person would, to let people know what I'm up to and to promote stuff. I don't feel the need. It's the same reason I got my ham license, my amateur radio license. I was very excited. I really enjoyed it. Took the test, got the general license, and got all the equipment and stuff. And then I never use it because I realized, wait a minute, I'm already talking to people for my work all day, every day. And the last thing I want to do, I know there are people. I know Art Bell, he used to do his radio show, get off the air, and then go on and talk to hams for 2 more hours. I just want to go home and watch TV. I just want to shut up. Come vacation time, the most fun thing to do, and we'll talk to Chris Marquardt, our photo guy, in a bit. The most fun thing to do is to take pictures. I'm a avid, not very good, but avid amateur photographer, and I love, I love the gear, I love the cameras, and I love to take the pictures. And yeah, I guess the whole point of taking pictures is sharing them, isn't it? I guess. Sort of for me, it's taking the pictures, getting a great image. I guess if I get a really good image, there's several places I put my photos. One is my Smug Mug page. Smug Mug is actually, I think, a really great photo service for mostly professionals because it's not free, where you put pictures and people can buy them if they want to. You can have a store. You can have people can print them on mouse pads and coffee mugs and things like that. So I do put stuff on Smug Mug, and that's actually easy to find, my Smug Mug page. Probably the best place, at least to see the highest quality version of my photos. One of the reasons I like Smug Mug is it stores them at a higher quality. So that's leo.camera. Leo.camera is my Smug Mug page. So probably the best pictures I take in Japan will go there. I'll put some on Instagram. I still use Instagram. I kind of like Instagram, even though it's owned by Facebook. So there's some, you know, issue about privacy and so forth. I like posting pictures on Instagram. The quality's low. But if I get a nice picture or a fun shot, I think of Instagram more as sharing the situation than sharing the art of the photography. I'll put it there. I do like Google Plus. I have mixed feelings about Google Plus. You know, this was Google's big attempt to become the next Facebook, and it flopped. And Google's kind of neglected it ever since. It's still there, though. And there's a lot of great photography on it. A lot of great photography. So maybe I'll put some stuff there. If it's a really great shot, I'll tweet it maybe. So, yeah, you know, it'll float. It'll be there. It'll float around, Dobby. But if you really, I think my best photos, I like to put them up on SmugMug. And that's easy to remember. It's just leo.camera. 8888-ASK-LEO. The chat room, I love having the chat room in the background, by the way. And you can be in there, too, during the live show, which is weekends, 2 to 5 p.m. Eastern. That's when I'm live doing this show. Is irc.twit.tv. Oh, and then Mike B. in the chat room saying, well, what about, you know, OneDrive for backup? I use a lot of, I have Amazon Prime, I have OneDrive, I have Google Photos, and I have Apple Photos. But that's for personal use. That's not for public sharing. I certainly, you know, my images are safe in that regard. We live in a golden age in that regard, right? All you have to do is put them on your phone. They'll automatically go to, you know, all the places your phone's connected to. 8888-ASK-LEO. Todd, Iowa. Hello, Todd.
Hey, Leo. How are you today?
I'm great. How are you doing?
Pretty good. Got a question about Eero. I took your advice and did Eero throughout my whole house. And since the latest firmware upgrade, they have an option to turn on the IP version 6.
Yeah.
Did I do it or not?
I did. I don't know why.
I guess I don't know why either.
Yeah. My understanding of IPv6 is limited, so I probably should do some research. But I'll tell you what I know. So in the original days of the internet, we created the idea of the internet is just like a phone system. Everybody on the internet has to have a unique address. Technically, every computer on the internet has to have a unique address, but we found a way around that. So in the early days of the internet, we did something called a dotted quad. Which was, and you've seen it before, four numbers ranging from 0 to 255 and separated by periods. So could be 192.168.1.1 would be a internet address in the standard, the version 4 standard, that is the standard for everything right now. The problem is that's a limited space, and we started running out of them. And we need one for every device. That got a little bit fixed by the fact that everybody's using routers. So you really have many, many devices connected to the internet in your house, right, on that Eero. But the Eero really only has one address, your public internet address that your internet service provider gives you. And then that address is shared with all the devices. And the Eero worries about handing off traffic. So that helped a little bit. It saved us a few years. But ultimately, we need to move to a better system than IPv4, and all the gray beards of the internet have been lobbying for this for more than a decade. So we created a new standard. They created a new standard called IP version 6. IP version 6, instead of being a dotted quad, is it 8? I can't remember how many. It's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. So it's separated by colons instead of dots, but it's the same idea. And it has so many possibilities that you could give an internet address to every single atom in the universe. Well, in the galaxy anyway. We don't know how big the universe is. But every atom in the galaxy could have its own internet address. So we think that'll be enough. So the theoretical 128-bit address allows 2 to the 128th addresses, plenty. So we want to move to that. The problem is all the routers, all the gear, everything in your house, all of that stuff is designed around version 4. And mostly it's the internet service providers who don't want to buy all new gear. There are other advantages to version 6 besides having more addresses. It actually can speed things up. It's a little faster in routing stuff over the internet. It supports some sophisticated technologies for making things flow more quickly over the internet. And unlike IPv4, It was designed with mobile devices in mind, with security in mind. It's better suited to the modern internet. You probably are going to use IPv4 for the foreseeable future. The reason that it's good to turn it on your Eero is it may speed up some sites that are IPv6 aware. There's no negative. There's not a huge amount of positive. But I like it because it means these routers are ready for the future. The real stopping point at this point is internet service providers. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. I forgot to mention the most important way I share my photos. I didn't mention Flickr, but I forgot to mention the most important way I share my photos on my website. So I should mention that as well, leolaporte.com. Although usually that's just, I have so many ridiculous things that I do. Like the Galapagos trip, I made a Microsoft Sway with, which is kind of a presentation tool. The problem with that is it's, who knows how long Microsoft will support Sway. And so it's kind of a useful contemporary way to share the photos, but it's not a long-term solution. My long-term public archives are at SmugMug. And then if I really like something, I'll put it on leolaporte.com, which I don't do a whole lot these days. All right, Chris, I see we have an assignment. I'm going to pull down,
yes, we do.
Pull down the pictures.
The angle assignment.
Angle. The Galapagos turtle picture, all the Galapagos pictures are at leo.camera. That's the best place to get a high-quality version. And you can get a print version of those as well. Lately, I've been kind of falling in love with this picture. There's something about it I really like. These are the boats going out to whale watch.
It's beautiful.
Isn't that pretty? I don't know.
It's got the repetition of the two ships or the two zodiacs. It's got people framed between the water and the cloud. The cloud is interesting. The mountains in the background, that's a very...
It's kind of a classic. Yeah,
it's a background that gives you context without being overburdening.
Yeah, I'm very happy with it.
It's a very... And one interesting thing is that the way we interpret motion in a picture, you often have... Like the direction that feels more at ease for us is from left to right. So by having things move in a picture from the right to the left, you add a bit more tension in the picture.
Oh, that's interesting.
So see, it feels a bit more...
It's good to talk to a real photographer once in a while because they understand this stuff, right? Yeah, isn't that interesting? You're right. It's more tension because they're going left, they're moving left.
But that is nicely contrasted with the serenity of the entire scene. So you have this little it adds interest
just
to the photo.
The slightest bit. What's cool is it's Washington crossing the Delaware. It kind of echoes that. You don't know that because you're German.
The picture?
Yeah, Washington crossing the Delaware is a famous painting, which this kind of reminds me of.
I'm looking at it right now. Yep. There's a subreddit. There's a subreddit called Accidental Renaissance, and that's filled with photos that sort of remind you of Renaissance pictures or Renaissance paintings.
I should post it there. This is the tortoise. If you really want a close-up of a giant tortoise, I don't know why
that's
you
would. The place to be. Yeah. And look at the look on its face.
Oh, yeah. That's what's funny. These guys are really ancient. They're really, their nose is just two drilled holes in their skull. These things are as ancient as you can get. It's so cool. And to give you a sense of size, they're huge.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
I don't know if that does it, but Lisa couldn't, you're not allowed to sit on them, so I couldn't.
But you easily could.
You could ride it. Yeah.
Well, sure.
Yeah, the sailors used the shells for all sorts of things. Yeah, that's my Ecuadorian and my Peruvian trip last year. I didn't put up anything from France. I will, though. Mama, don't take my Kodachrome. It's time for the photo guy. That magic music tells us Chris Marquardt is here. He's a professional photographer who hangs his hat at chrismarquardt.com. He also does great, I'm dying to do one of these, great workshops at discoverthetopfloor.com and a world-famous podcast called Tips from the Top Floor. Hello, Chris.
Hello, Leo. Thanks for that introduction.
I should mention you also join us from time to time to talk about photography. Yay.
That's what I'm here for. We have an assignment to review.
Oh, how exciting.
The angle assignment. So we had some time. I think we have, let me check. We have
like
53
5 weeks
people
or
having
6 weeks
assigned
or
and submitted something to the assignment. Out of almost 13,000 people who are members of the Tech Guy group on Flickr.
Wow.
Which is just mind-boggling. So I have made a choice of three photos on that topic. And the first one is by Pixel Pusher. Pixel Pusher. Push the picture to Flickr. say that fast 10 times. By the title of Parallax Angle. And it's interesting because it's one of these things that he pretty much just noticed. She writes this in the description. The sun reflecting off the windshields of two cars up through a balcony railing through a door to cast dual shadows onto a ceiling. So
see, none of that is obvious from the picture, but none of it matters either. It's a very
it's not, but
interesting
the picture shows,
picture. Yeah.
The picture shows a ceiling or a wall and the shadows coming from all different sides and making interesting angles. And it's a pretty abstract picture, not fully abstract because there are shadows of two people in there. So it has a human element, but the shadows being all wonky and... it's a very reduced picture in terms of the color, just it's almost black and white, and yeah, I like it. It's an interesting discovery that
now
Pixel Pusher did there.
We should point out that this is crazy because we're reviewing photographs on the radio, and I know, folks, you can't see these, but I think that the information that Chris passes along about what makes an interesting picture is valuable, and you can. When you get home, go to techguylabs.com, and we'll have all the photos there so you can see what he was talking about. So their illustrations are available for download at a later date. Picture two, Chris.
All right, second one by Erik Wüstenhagen, which is a German name. So I suppose he's from somewhere around here. Title is Red Lines, and what we see is... It almost looks like it's from a science fiction.
I think this is beautiful.
It is an interesting picture, yeah. Isn't it? So what we see is a picture shooting up into, looks like the inside of a parking structure or something. So there's like circular concentric circles, but only like a part of these circles with interesting lights on them. There's concrete. There are some blinds of sorts. So that might be maybe it's a cooling tower or something. And then you have this diagonal chimney type thing going through the picture with two red rails on it. And I have no good idea what it is. It doesn't say in the description, but it has this, I don't even know. This is fairly abstract. It has this quality of feeling very futuristic, like maybe it's a particle accelerator or it's a starting rail for a rocket or it's in a secret scientific compound in some 70s science fiction. Could be all of that. And it evokes a lot of things in me.
It's funny because I feel like this is the kind of image that you can see more of in Germany than any other country in the world.
It is, yeah, it could probably be
Germans,
somewhere.
Now, it's a stereotype, and forgive me, and Chris is from Germany and is German, but the stereotype is that Germans have engineer minds. They're great engineers, and they like building things like this, and I just feel like this probably, in fact, I know it's in Germany because the sign is in German. So it just and when I was in Germany, I took a lot of pictures of this kind of industrial things. It just feels that way. Now it's a terrible stereotype because there's of course great musicians and artists and writers who or totally.
Oh, I can totally live with that. I'm fine.
It's just, it feels like, I love this picture. It's one of my favorite pictures. And I also like the colors. I mean, the red.
Again,
of the
a very
angle.
Reduced color set,
yeah,
right?
Yeah. But then everything else is kind of gray. It's really nice. Great yeah. image. Yeah. All right.
And last but not least, picture by Don Komareczka. Ooh. Perspective and what Don does. And I know he does a lot of these pictures of snowflakes. And these are not just pictures of snowflakes, but macro photos of snowflakes.
You've got to tell us how he does this. This is amazing.
He made a book. Well, I think there should have been a YouTube video where he explains how he does it. And it involves a very a special lens. But it doesn't involve as much technology as you'd think. He lives in Canada, so that's a good place to be
lots
if you
snow.
Want to photograph
yeah.
snow. But these are super high resolution macros of individual snowflakes, and this one it seems like it's the same snowflake in different lights. So you have two pictures. It's a diptych, two pictures next to each other, and one has the light more from the back, and the other has the light more from the front. And I just love that. Again, I know he made a book because I have it actually.
He's quite famous for pictures. These images. It's really.
He is.
It's nice to know Don's out there participating in our photo contests.
Totally, yeah. Totally. And this is a very good example of these. And all of them, of course, all snowflakes are different. And this is a good example of those. I love how they, even in some of the areas, like in the middle, they turn into little colors, like little rainbows. And you get interesting effects there because they're so small and the distances between things are so tight that it even changes the color of the light that falls on them.
You can see Don's technique and a whole bunch of his beautiful snowflake images at his website, skycrystals.ca, skycrystals.ca. He is a really great photographer, and I just love this technique. I don't know if he invented it, but he certainly made it famous. It's like a thin section of a snowflake, and the detail is amazing, just amazing.
Yeah, and if I dig out that explanation, because it really shows you that you don't need a super cool special building to do these things. You can actually do this in your backyard if you have the right conditions.
Yeah, the picture he has of his equipment includes a mitten. So
a black mitten. because you know the little hairs of the wool keep the snowflakes at a distance and holds them perfectly. Yeah.
Very nice image. Thank you, Don. And thank you, Chris. And thank you, everybody, who has submitted some beautiful images today. Now, there's no prize, by the way. This is just for fun. And really, it's an excuse to give you a chance to go out and take some pictures. We'd like, you know, the best way to get to be a good photographer is taking more pictures. And the assignment just gives you an excuse to do it. Now, I'm going to Japan, Chris, so I don't want to influence you in any way, but any assignment that might be particularly suited to my travels would be welcome.
Well,
what is our assignment for next time?
It's already decided, and it doesn't have to do much with Japan. The next assignment is foot.
Well, there's feet in Japan, I believe. Yeah,
well, they
okay.
have. Yeah, I think they do. I think they have feet in Japan. Yes.
They don't use the imperial system, their metric system, I'm sure. But I will find some feet somewhere in Japan. So here's the deal. This is how it works. You take a picture of illustrating the word or concept or idea, foot, whatever that means to you, and you upload it to Flickr.com. That's Yahoo's free photo sharing site. I put a lot of pictures up there, too, by the way. I love Flickr. And there's a tech guy group. You submit it to that once a week. No more than that, Renee Silverman will welcome you and make sure you put the word foot in the tag so we find it. And in about a month, Chris will look at them and review them. Find Chris at discoverthetopfloor.com. Chris Marquardt, it's always a pleasure. Thank you for being here.
Thank you for having me.
See you next time. You're going out again on safari. Where are you going next time?
Well, it's not a safari. It's more of a long workshop that I'll be on.
All right, cool. Where is it? Where are you going?
Well, there's a one-week workshop here in Germany, the Abbey Workshop Abbey in southern Germany.
Oh, fun!
After that, I'll go to New York.
We're thinking about because you know my Lisa's son Michael is 15, is taking German. He's getting an A+ in it. He loves
come
it.
Come here, I'll show you around.
So we thought, you know what, we really have to take him to Germany. So we're thinking, we haven't settled on it yet, but maybe for Christmas, because we take the week off for Christmas anyway, we'll go do the Christmas markets in Germany. And I think we'll do a Rhine cruise again, because that was so much fun. And they go and all the little towns, and they go to
Rhine cruise from Amsterdam down to Switzerland through Germany,
yeah,
and then
like that,
you'll be in all these medieval cities.
Lisa wants to go back to Rotenburg. She loved
Rotenburg,
that.
Op der Tauber. Yeah,
she loved that, and I think that'd be fun for Christmas because it's a medieval town. I think the one we're looking at has Rotenburg on it, and Nuremberg and Würzburg, and so
that
we'll
sounds fun.
Yeah, and maybe and so one of the places we went was Melk Abbey in Austria, and I love that. That is a beautiful abbey.
Oh, old abbeys, and the one I'll hold the workshop at is now an education center, and they have places to live. You will actually sleep. Your room is one of the old cells that the nuns were in.
You do the best workshops. When I retire,
legendary now.
When I retire, I'm just taking your workshops. That's going to be what I do.
So when are you going to retire?
Not for years. But you'll still be around. You're a young guy.
I'll do my best. Yep. Yeah. Look at the gray.
Yeah.
It's not getting any better.
All right. Well, hey, have fun. We're going to talk next week. So
we'll talk next week.
You have fun then.
All right.
All right, Chris. See ya.
Take care. Bye. Yeah.
Markwart and Elgin.
Oh, and Elgin. Yeah. So I'll go where Mike and Amira go to eat, and then I'll go take. Yeah. That would be a complete life. But I'm not retiring anytime soon. And, you know, I'll do the tech guy show as long as they let me. That one I'm never retiring from. This was always my dream. You know, from college on, my dream was to have a nationally syndicated radio show. That was like, boy, that's heaven. You only work 2 days a week. That's heaven. So even if I didn't do podcasts or anything else, I always imagine this would be the last thing. But this is the one thing I don't own, I don't control, and I can be fired from. So it's not up to me how long I do this, but as long as the Premier Networks hell have me, I'll keep doing this. I might be 90 years old. And now with the augmented reality. But I would love, this isn't work, this is fun. And so I would keep doing this, for sure. I will do until they kick me out. I do imagine at some point, somebody will say, Leo, you're too old. Actually, Premier is in good shape now, Archandra. So they renegotiated, they're doing a chapter, 11 reorg, and renegotiated with all their debt, and I think they've cut it in half. And so Premier is very good cash flow. They make a lot of money. Profit's good. It's just they had a huge amount of debt. They were highly leveraged. And by reducing that leverage by half, they feel like they're in very, very good shape. So I think Premier is going to survive. Or it's Clear Channel, not Premier. But I think the parent company is going to do great. So Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888 Ask Leo, the phone number. You know, we were talking about where I put my photos. I should have mentioned my blog. See how easy that is to forget. I don't blog very often, but almost always when I come back from a trip, I put photos up at leolaporte.com. That's an easy one to remember. My personal website. So there's plenty of places. And I'm always trying. One of the fun things about doing photography and traveling and being the tech guy is I always am interested in different ways of sharing your journeys. And most recently, what I played with a little bit, and I really like it, is Microsoft has it's part of Office. I don't know how well known it is. Have you ever heard of Sway? Microsoft Sway? It's actually, I think, really a great technology. I think it's free to everybody. You don't think you even have to own Office. That may change. But Microsoft Sway or Office Sway, I guess they call it now, is a presentation program. You go to sway.com, you can see what it's capable of. And you put pictures in it, it could make a travel log, including maps and stuff. I did a Sway of our trip to South America last year. That's at leolaporte.com. You scroll back in time a little bit. The only reason I don't use it as my sole way of sharing is, as with anything like this, who knows how long Microsoft's going to keep this around. But it's really, I think, a fun way to do presentations. It's not PowerPoint. It's really photo-focused, multimedia-focused. And it has a very nice way of doing like a photo show. So if you're thinking, you can do it on a Mac. They have an app. They have Windows 10 app, of course, iPhone, iPad. There, I don't believe there's an Android where to do it, but there's a web interface to Sway. So even on an Android device, you could do it through through the browser. And it's a great way, you know, I don't want to subject anybody. The worst thing you can do, come back from a trip and say, I'm going to do a slideshow of my 352 favorite pictures. I wouldn't do that to you or my friends. But I often do two things. One is make a photo book so that I have something, you know, I can open up and go through this printed pictures. And the other thing I do, well, I'll make a Sway and post that on the web. It's a kind of a fun slideshowy way to look at photos. The negative on it is if you really like a picture, and I don't sell my pictures, so I don't need to protect them. But if you really like a picture, you can't really get it out of the Sway very well. So that's where posting the full-size image on Smug Mug or somewhere like that is probably a little bit better for people who say, oh, I want that. Somebody in the chat room said, I want that giant tortoise picture from the Galapagos. Well, to get that, that image is in the Sway, but you can't really get it out of there very easily. It's kind of part of a slideshow or a presentation. So leo.camera is where you get the full-size images. Terry on the line from Bozeman, Montana. Hello, Terry.
Hi, Leo. Thank you for taking my call.
My pleasure. Thanks for calling.
I have two questions. My first question is, I bought a Apple computer about a year ago to replace my Sony that had Vista on it.
Yeah.
And all my email account, I kept on the old computer because I didn't want to start getting 300 emails from any time I order anything. So, but now it's come to a point that can't be updated anymore, the Vista. So therefore, a lot of the, if I click on an email, a lot of the images won't come up because they're not up. It's not updated.
Right.
And anyway, I didn't know if there's a way to set up some kind of email account where I can not mess up my new computer with all that junk mail.
Yeah. First of all, the email account is not attached to the Vista computer. You've set up a mail program on the Vista computer that gets the email from somewhere. Who's your email provider?
On the Vista, it's Microsoft, right? I think. Or
So you don't get email with a computer. Computers don't come with email. You have to set up an account somewhere. You can set up account Microsoft Hotmail, maybe. Does that ring a bell?
I think it was Outlook.
Outlook. Okay, so Outlook.com. Yeah. So Microsoft offers free email. You know, all the big companies have free email. Outlook.com is Microsoft's. Google is Gmail.com. Apple, if you have a Macintosh, as you do, has iCloud.com. And you have, believe it or not, email addresses at iCloud.com and Outlook.com.
I do have iCloud.com.
Yeah. We were talking earlier about free email programs. In general, if you want a free web-based email program that you can still use on a computer, Google's mail is very good because it gets rid of spam. So you don't get that junk mail. Google filters it all out better than Outlook does. So, but you can, if you wanted it, you may not want it, but you can look at your Outlook mail on your Macintosh. The trick for you, it sounds like you don't want to download those files onto your nice, pristine Macintosh. I don't blame you. Yes. But you want to check it.
And if I order anything on the Mac, then automatically, you know, I'll start getting all that.
Well, okay, again, the computer, it may feel this way to you, but the computer is not the email. You can get the email is provided by somebody, an email's provider. In your case, one is Microsoft Outlook. That's a Microsoft has really confused this. I don't blame you for being confused because there's a program called Outlook. There's a service called Outlook.com. They're two different things. So I'm not sure what your understanding is. I'm not sure where your email is coming from. You may just be using the Outlook program on your Vista machine. Is that what you were doing?
Yes.
So the question is, so the way email works is, it's kind of like an answering machine, you know, voicemail. It's stored somewhere, but by your provider. So if you have, for instance, a Verizon cell phone, your Verizon stores your voicemail. You can get it on your phone, but it's not really part of your phone. It's just your phone is the device that you use to get it. So somebody has your email account out there. It's and I don't know who that is. So that's the somebody set it up for you, maybe.
This is so long ago.
You don't even remember. The good news is you can go into Outlook. You can go into Outlook and look and see in the settings. It'll say there's an email account settings. You'll see at least some information that might help you figure out where's this email coming from. Somewhere out there.
Okay.
Is somebody getting your email? What's your? Oh, I know how I can ask. Well, I don't want you to tell your email address on the air.
Okay.
But there you have something. Your name at. What comes after the at sign?
BellSouth.net.
Got it. Your email provider is BellSouth. Now, they were your internet service provider at the time. Are they still your internet service provider?
But AT&T bought it or
that's
something.
That's how AT&T, right. Now we got it all figured. And this is another thing. the companies hide it, really. Because they don't really want you to know that your email is really coming to them. They kind of hide it. Oh, you just get email with your internet. Well, they're the email server. And so when BellSouth got sold to AT&T, AT&T kept BellSouth at BellSouth.com as your email address. But it's going into AT&T. And AT&T for years used Yahoo. But then Yahoo was purchased by Verizon. So I don't know who AT&T is using nowadays. I bet you it ain't Yahoo. So somebody, some company out there has inherited your BellSouth.com email address. When email is sent to you, it's not really sent to you. It's sent to their computer. And then your program Outlook goes to their computer and says, give me the mail. You could do that on any computer. You could do it on your Macintosh. You could do it on your phone. All you need is to set up the program to go to wherever that mail is stored, BellSouth.com. And get it. Now, here's the beauty part. You could do this with a web browser. You don't even have to download that mail. If you don't want that junk mail on your computer, you could do that with a web browser. I have to take a break. We're going to take a break for news.
Okay.
But can you hang on and I'll explain a little more. I know this is a weird, complicated subject, but I think this is worth figuring out. Hey, our show today brought to you by our fine sponsor, Quicken Loans, the number one lender in the U.S. as of a couple of months ago. And I want to take some credit for that. Actually, I really should give the credit to Rocket Mortgage. It's from Quicken Loans. And it is the easiest, the fastest, the most straightforward, the most transparent way to get a home loan. You know, in the last house we bought, Lisa and I bought about almost 4 years ago, we did it the old-fashioned way, the 19th century way. Where you go to a bank, you know, you get all dressed up, gotta look good, gotta look like we're good for the money. You go to a bank, and there's somebody there who practically has an eye shade and sleeve garters on and a calculator. And he's got a book, or in my case, our case, it was a clipboard with all the rates of all the different loans and stuff. And he, you know, you talk to him for a while, he makes small talk, he offers you a cup of really bad coffee, and then he gives you. Here you go. Here's the application. Fill this. Go home. Fill this out and get back to me. You go home. You take it out. You fill it all out. You go find all the information. Get online. You look up all your bank statements. Maybe you go up to the attic, find those old pay stubs. You go down to the basement. You find all. And you put it all together. You bring it to him. He says, great. We'll get back to you. This is 2 weeks later already. We'll get back to you. Then they get back to you. And they say, hey, you know what else we need? Fax us. Your pay stubs from 1922 or whatever. And you go, oh, boy. This literally happened to us 2 months in. We're still faxing them stuff. We went on a cruise. We went on a vacation. And we had to call Lisa's sister and say, Debbie, can you fax them some stuff for us? It was crazy. We almost lost the house. That's the old way. The new way from Quicken Loans. Thank you, Quicken Loans Rocket Mortgage. You do it all on your phone or your laptop or your tablet. You answer a few. You go right now. Go to rocketmortgage.com/tech guy. Get it set up because who knows? You might find that perfect house tonight. You might go to an open house and say, let's buy this. You get it all set up. You can answer a few simple questions like name, address, birthday, the kind of stuff you know off the top of your head. No research involved. They have trusted partnerships with all the financial institutions. So as soon as you give them permission, they can pull what they need. You don't have to go to the attic. They get it. They crunch the numbers, and then based on your income and your assets and your credit, they'll tell you the loans you qualify for. You choose the rate, the term, the down payment. It's completely straightforward, and this whole thing took less than 10 minutes. You could do it at an open house, and before you leave, say, we're approved, we'd like to make an offer. Great for refis, too. They have great refi rates. Quicken Loans, the best lender in the country, number one in customer satisfaction, 8 years running, according to J.D. Power, the biggest, and now the geek's friend, rocketmortgage.com/tech guy. Sure, some people like to go to the bank and get to know the banker and drink the bad coffee. But if you don't, rocketmortgage.com/tech guy. They're an equal housing lender. They're licensed in all 50 states. NMLSconsumeraccess.org, number 3030. Apply simply, understand fully, mortgage confidently with Rocket Mortgage. And remember, rocketmortgage.com/tech guy lets them know you heard it on the Tech Guy Show. Thank you. We thank them for their support, and we thank you for your support. And Quicken Loans, nice job. RocketMortgage.com/TechGuy. So I've kind of dumped a whole bunch on you here, Terry. So let me step back a little bit, because now you get what's going on. So when you, Bell South, who used to be your internet service provider, when you set up internet access, they give you some email boxes, and they asked you what your, you know, it's your name at, you know, let's just say it's Terry@bellsouth.com. And so people now can send you email, but it isn't on that computer. The computer, the Vista computer, was set up to go to the Bell South servers. That's the computers at the Bell South company, and say, give me my email. And then it would download it onto your computer. It may still be at Bell South. Sometimes they leave it there. Sometimes they get it and store it on your computer. You're right. You probably don't, especially if there's a lot of junk mail, you don't want to waste the space, waste the time. A lot of that's old. You don't care about it anymore. So the good news is, on your new nice shiny Macintosh, there will be a way that you can look at what's on the Bell South / AT&T server without getting it. So you can actually use your browser to see the email, go through it, see what you want, but none of it will end up on your Mac.
Oh, great.
Isn't that nice? Okay. It's like a window to your email. So let me just see what AT&T uses for email these days. I don't even know. They used to use Yahoo. They probably gave you a login. They have a webmail. That's what we call that webmail, which is when you use your browser to go to something like mail.AT&T.com, log in with your account name and password, and there your mail will be. But it's not touching your Mac any more than any other website is. You're just looking at it like through a window as a website. So that's what I would suggest. Now, you probably at some point want to set up an email account that's yours and, let's say, has good email filtering, right? That's not tied to your internet service provider. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yes.
So that you can do with Google, although Google is a mixed bag because it's free. They don't offer a lot of support. On the other hand, it's the best email system, and they have really good spam filtering. That junk mail that you're getting is called spam, and they filter it out very well, so you never see it. The problem is when you tell people what your email address is, you tell them at bellsouth.net probably, right?
Yes.
Yeah. So you have a couple of choices. You could start telling people a new address if you want.
I have certain email going to my phone, you know, that relates to my job or something.
That's their company address, right? My opinion, if you want to be an email pro and keep using email, and nowadays it's kind of required, isn't it?
Yes.
In my opinion, it's best to create an email account at a paid service. They're not very expensive. It might be $10, $15 a year. It's not expensive. But that by going to a paid service, you get more features, and you get somebody you can call. And I think that's nice to have support. So if something goes wrong, you say, what's going on with my email? And they can help you.
Okay. So
Gmail's great because it's completely free and very powerful, but there ain't nobody to call. You can't. Okay. You go ahead and call Google and see what happens. Nobody's going to answer. So you have a lot of options. What if it were me and I didn't, and it was serious, I would not use my company email for personal email because the company owns that and can access it. I would create a personal email at a somewhere like I use fastmail.com. You can check it out, fastmail.com. It's a paid service.
Okay.
And then they will set up, and I would recommend this for an additional fee, you could say at terrysemail.com or something. You could have your own, use your family name, or you could have your own domain name. And one of the reasons that's good to do is then you never have to change your email address again. You can change providers all you want, but you own the address.
Oh,
and
okay.
So you, from now on, you tell everybody, my address is Terry at terrysemail.com or whatever you want it to be, and it'll never change, and you own it, and you can carry it. It's portable. You can move it anywhere you want. So if you decide, I don't like paying for email, I want to use Gmail, you can continue to use that address. And no one has to know that you've changed where your email goes.
Oh, okay.
Isn't that kind of nice?
Yes, that's really nice. I'll definitely look into that.
So fastmail.com, and then say, I want to set up my own domain. And that'll cost you, I think, $10 a year for the domain. But by doing that, then you own it. It's yours forever. I use, for instance, my email is leo@leoville.com. It's a dopey name, but I picked it 30 years ago, and I'm stuck with it. So leo@leoville.com. But it's never changed. It's always been that address, even though I've used different email providers every few years. You know, I move around. But I don't have to tell anybody a new address. It's always been that address.
Okay.
You also want a provider that provides very good spam filtering, because spam is really a problem on the internet, and most of the messages you get, something like 90%, will be junk mail. So
every time I order something, even if I opt out that I don't want any of your advertisements,
you
still get.
You bet.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's why a good anti-spam system is, and Gmail's is excellent. I used to have my email go through Gmail to Fastmail just to get the spam out. But Fastmail does a great job of getting the spam out, so I don't worry about it too much.
Definitely. Thank you.
So this is all very techy and complicated, because now you have to understand the kind of how email works. But
yeah.
But this, it's not connected to the computer. The computer is just set up to get email from a particular mailbox. And that mailbox isn't on your computer. It's out there. So
I could just look at it from my Apple.
Yeah.
Your
Apple just has to look into that mailbox. It's kind of like voicemail. You know, there's a company that has that voicemail, whoever your cell phone company is. But you can use different phones to get it. You can, you know, the company stores it, and then you use software to get it.
Oh, great. Thank you.
Does that make sense?
Yes, very much so. Good. I really appreciate that.
I'm glad we could talk.
I have one more quick question, if that's
certainly,
okay.
Certainly, of course.
Okay, I have a Kindle DX.
Yes.
And all of a sudden, the Wi-Fi will not connect. I mean, I don't have any problems with Wi-Fi connecting anywhere else. And I did there, it was months ago, I want to say a year ago or more, when they had their new update. And
So you have it set up to connect to your personal Wi-Fi, not the WhisperNet that they use?
Well, yeah, it's connected to that, but that goes through mine, doesn't it, the WhisperNet?
WhisperNet's different. That's a 3G connection, and actually, because the thing's kind of old, it may have stopped doing that. But you can tell your Kindle to connect to your own personal internet. There's a Wi-Fi setting in the Kindle settings. Make sure. That's two different things. So the WhisperNet is the free connectivity Amazon leased service from, I think it was, I can't remember, AT&T. Who knows if that's still working. There's probably a limit on how many years that works for.
The WhisperNet, well, when I went to their problem solving on Amazon's website for Kindle, they still brought up WhisperNet.
Okay.
This particular
Maybe the WhisperNet's not working properly, so you'll need to check with Amazon. But in the interim, you don't need WhisperNet. Just use your Wi-Fi. They did WhisperNet because nobody had – I don't know why they did it. I guess because they thought people might want to get books when they're on the road or something. But as long as you don't mind getting books when you're at home, just set it up to use your Wi-Fi. I got to run. I'm sorry.
Simply Safe.
Thank you. Well, hey, how you doing? Leo Lapine, I don't know. Get a little punchy towards the end of the show. How you doing? Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Time to talk computers, the internet, home theater, digital photography, smartphones, smart watches, how email works. 8888-ASK-LEO, that's the phone number, 888-827-5536. That's toll-free from anywhere in the U.S. or Canada. Outside that area, you can still call. Just use Skype out. It won't cost you anything. It's a toll-free number, 888-827-5536. Website for the show, techguylabs.com. Everything we talk about is up there. It's free. Audio and video from the past shows is up there. And there's options to leave comments, too, if you want. That way, if you don't, you don't have to yell at the radio. You can just yell at me on the website, techguylabs.com. We got into this conversation about how email works. And this is difficult for me because geeks understand this kind of almost it's in their blood, right? I know how email works. What are you talking about? Why wouldn't you know how? It's just obvious. But it isn't obvious. In fact, as I started to try to describe it, I got all tangled up because it's kind of complicated and confusing. And a normal person who has not made a study of how the internet works would probably be just as confused as Terry. So the difficulty is, I have to work on my metaphors. It's hard to explain how this all works in just a few minutes. So I'm not sure if I did a very good job or not. Terry left satisfied, though. I spent a little more time with her during the break and made some suggestions. Email is still a vital communication service, right? I mean, it's still, we all need it. Somewhat it's been replaced, especially with young people, with messaging services, text messaging and things like that, you know. But email, even at work, by the way, messaging has become very popular with Slack and other programs like it. Because email is so overwhelmed these days with junk mail, irrelevant mail that isn't exactly junk, but a junkie, that it's become harder to use effectively. People who use email a lot, and I include myself in this, have devised all sorts of complex means of organizing and triaging our email to get rid of spam, to focus content that we need to see into a particular inbox and so forth. And we all have complicated, elaborate rules. If you're a programmer, you're writing programs to do it. It gets crazy. I don't know how normal people deal with it, to be honest with you. But the first step, in my opinion, obviously you have to understand a little bit about how this works. Basically, email can't go to you directly. It doesn't. Your email doesn't fly to your computer. It flies to a provider, an email, what we call server, that serves up the email to your computer. That server sometimes is your internet service provider. Sometimes it's Google's Gmail or Yahoo's Mail. Microsoft has Outlook Mail. Sometimes it's a paid service like Fastmail that I mentioned. They all work basically the same way. They're running email server software that collects the mail through the internet, much the same way a website works. You have an internet domain, and the domain name system says, oh, you want to send email to Leo? Well, it goes routed through here to there, ends up on the server. And then periodically, my local software, my email client, picks it up. This is the complicated but very prevalent system, client-server system, where there's one computer that's a server and one computer that's a client. You're the client. Your email provider is the server. You can use many clients to get the email from that server. And I think it's a good idea to spend some time thinking about who you want to use for your email server. There are some hardcore geeks who run their own server at home. Don't. This is a recipe for disaster. You really have to know what you're doing. Do not. Better, just like running your own website out of your house. Better to go and get a web host or a mail host. You can use the free email servers. There are quite a few of them, and probably the most popular by far is Google's own Gmail. Very, very popular. But as we've heard, even on this show, because Google gives it to you for free, you know, they support it with advertising. They don't give you the best support. Frankly, there's very little support. So if something goes wrong with it, sometimes it's hard to get things fixed. It's difficult to get somebody to help you set it up. You have to kind of do a lot of research. But it has so many features, most people just use Gmail. Maybe you used AOL in the day. Remember that? AOL Mail, or some people going even further back, MCI Mail or Genie or CompuServe. These are all mail systems, mail servers that you would connect to and get your mail. Really popular these days is the system of webmail. Gmail started this, where instead of having a special email program on your computer like Microsoft Outlook or Apple Mail, you would use your browser. You'd use Internet Explorer or Chrome or Safari and go to a website which happens to be a view into your email. That's how Gmail works. It's a view into your email. But many of us still use email software on our computer, client software on our computer that downloads that mail and stores it for us. And if you really want to get sophisticated about email and parsing it and sorting it and so forth, the client is pretty important. But so is the server. It's important to choose a good server. I kind of am coming to the opinion that you probably need to pay for your email server if you're serious about it. That the free services they're never going to offer the same level of support. They're going to, you know, you're kind of hoping they keep going. You don't really own the account any more than you own your Facebook page or your Twitter feed. They own it, and you kind of operate at their pleasure. And if they decide, we don't like you, Google does this, we don't like you, they can just kill your account, and there goes your email address and all your email. So it's better probably to own it, to pay somebody like Fastmail to run a server that you then log into with your client. And as you get more sophisticated, you can do more and more things to filter out spam. I do things with Fastmail. For instance, I have a special folder just for email that's addressed directly to me. See, a lot of the mail that we get is not either I'm a CC, a copy, or it's a newsletter that's addressed to the newsletter group, not to me personally. A lot of that email is maybe important, but not the first thing I want to see. I want to see stuff addressed directly to me. So I sort that into a folder. And then I have a folder for VIP senders, my mom, my wife, my family. Those people go, my work, go right into a special VIP folder. That way I see that. I always check that mail first, right? That's the most important mail. Don't want to miss mail from mom. I also have mail for mailing lists, a folder just for mailing lists. The way I do that, this is a little more sophisticated, but on most email systems, you can write filters. Fastmail has a very sophisticated email scripting system called Sieve, and I have a filter that says if the word unsubscribe appears in the email, presume that that's a newsletter and put that in the newsletter folder. It works most of the time, unless you write to me about unsubscribing. Then it'll go in a folder. So you got to check those folders once in a while. But that's a great way of getting a lot of the bulk out of your email so you can focus down. And I think people who use email a lot use a lot of tools like this. These are the ways to kind of organize your email and make it useful. Unfortunately, I think we have to these days. There's so much junk in our email. Not merely spam, but just junk that we really got to get kind of pay some attention to fixing that, sorting it out. Anyway, I kind of thought I'd finish that conversation with Terry. I don't know how far along we got, but I hope that helps a little bit understanding how all this works. We'll take a little break, take more of your calls. 888-ASK Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 888-ASK Leo, the phone number. And we're going to, by the way, keep taking calls at the end of the show because I'm recording ahead for vacation time. So if you're on the line, hang on the line. We'll get to every single call and we'll get many more too. So 888-ASK Leo. Adam in Pasadena. Thank you for hanging on, Adam. Leo Laporte here.
Hey,
welcome to the show. What can I do for you today?
Oh, well, I had a question. I was listening earlier when I was driving.
Yeah.
And basically, here's my question. I bought a 2017 iMac computer from a private seller.
Okay.
When I went and picked it up, you know, I was kind of like, hey, man, why are you selling this for $1,600 when you just bought it, you know, in August?
So he was, it's not new. He was selling his recently purchased iMac.
Yes.
Okay.
So at that point, you know, I check the serial numbers on everything, and I'm not as savvy as I used to be when it comes to computers, but it still had its Apple Care. So okay. I contacted Apple. It was still under Apple Care for another 2.5 years.
That's good.
I had everything swapped into my name.
You need to do that because it's in registered in the previous owner's name, so that's good.
Yeah, so it all got registered into my name. Everything was fine. He said he wiped it and everything. The guy didn't really seem like too shady. He's a young, you know.
No, the fact that you were able to transfer the Apple Care is a very good sign, frankly.
Yeah, and so at that point I said, "Well, what, you know, like the computers."
Was the Apple Care in the seller's was it in the seller's name or?
Yeah. Yeah. No. It was in his name.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yes, the seller's name.
Yeah, good. So it's not like he stole it from somebody because the Apple Care is in his name. So that means he bought it.
No, he literally still had the receipt from from Best Buy.
You did everything right. So what's the problem?
Well, recently, I don't know if for sure it was completely wiped or if he might have possibly put a keylogger. And the reason why is shortly after I bought the computer, I don't remember if I used it to order something online where I put my debit card information on there, but my debit card was compromised.
Okay.
And that could have came from any reason.
Lots of ways that can happen, but...
Lots of ways that could happen.
If you don't wipe the computer yourself, you really don't know.
Yeah, so that's basically what I'm getting at. And so this was about a little over a month ago. I got my card compromised. I got a new one. In less than 1 month, I just recently, for maybe the second or third time, ordered something through the computer instead of just using my phone like I normally do. And I ordered some parts for a truck through a reputable company. But literally a week or two after, like a week later, my card compromised again.
Yeah.
And so I said, oh, man, this happened twice in less than a month. And the only thing that I've changed differently, because I usually pay with cash for the most part. I don't use the card all the time.
Let's get to the bottom line. I doubt you have a keystroke logger on there. It's possible. So the first thing you want to do now is, and you should do it, by the way, anytime you buy a used computer, don't trust the seller to wipe it. You wipe it. And it's easy to do on a Mac. Here's the really good news. It's trivial. So I'm going to tell you how to do that in a second. But I bet you this doesn't fix it. So you're going to look at what else could be a problem, right? Because something's going on. You shouldn't lose a credit card number, especially a debit card number, shouldn't be lost twice in a short period of time. So
yeah, and it's like I barely used it. The only place I've used it is like maybe some gas stations. And I check to see if there's any kind of a scanner. Sometimes maybe there could be.
You got a new number after the first time, right?
Yeah, of course.
Yeah. Well, let me first tell you, answer the computer question, which is, it's a simple thing to, now when you set up that computer, one of the things that might have happened is, he wouldn't even need to have a keystroke logger on this, is you set it up with your own iCloud account, is that correct?
Yes, so I have it all set up with my iCloud account.
Don't use his iCloud account, right?
No, I have mine, and I set myself up as the admin, but...
you got to wipe it anyway. You always should do this. So when you buy a Mac, because Apple has all of these protections in it, when you buy a Mac, you want to make sure that the previous owner has signed out of his iCloud account. Actually, before he does that, he removes the Mac from Find My Mac. That's a signal to Apple that he doesn't want it anymore, and he signs out of his iCloud account. Then you reboot the computer holding down the Option and the R key. And what you're going to do is it'll take a little while to reboot because it's going to boot into the installer. And in there, there's a menu that's got the disk utility. You go to the disk utility and you erase the drive. In fact, why not repartition the drive? Just delete all the partitions and start over. You can have a single partition, but delete the partitions, then erase the drive. Now, if there's a keystroke logger, it's gone. Any software of theirs, it's gone. You then install the operating system, and it'll install the current operating system as updated as the computer was. So it may be behind, depending on whether the previous owner had been updating the operating system. But it might be High Sierra, whatever. You install the operating system. It'll tell you what operating system you install on that computer. That's a fresh start. Now, I left out the most important step, which is back up your data before you do this because you are erasing everything. but you have a good copy of your data. You can restore your data, reinstall your applications. That computer is completely clean. Make sure you use your iCloud account. Make sure he doesn't have access to your iCloud account. Make sure it's removed, that he removed it, very important, from Find My Mac. There are ways, I've heard this happen, that, you know, if somebody takes your computer but doesn't properly wipe it, maybe it's still on your iCloud account, that the person can see your location with Find My Mac, things like that. So you really want to get rid of all of that stuff and start fresh. Now, I think it's much more likely that it's not a keystroke logger on your computer, but that the gas station you're using perhaps has a skimmer on it. If there's a place that you use that card each time right before it got stolen, that's the place to suspect. A skimmer is a very easy device, very common, I'm sorry to say, that you can invisibly put into a credit card reader that captures the credit card number. There are ways, if you Google, skimmers and detecting skimmers, there are ways, there are things to look for. The card should go in easily. If it's a little harder to get in, sometimes that's a symptom. There are things to look for, but it's, much, in my opinion, much more likely. This guy sounded pretty much on the up and up and did all the things right. Much more likely that there's a skimmer at that gas station you're using than that Mac had it. Nevertheless, anytime anybody buys a new computer, you got to wipe it. You got to start from scratch, no matter what. It's just the right thing to do. People sometimes say, I want that software that he had on there. No, that's not yours. Erase the whole thing. Leo LaPointe, the tech guy. So here's I'm going to put an article in the show notes, how to spot and avoid credit card skimmers. That would be very handy. There are lots of ways. You know, at a restaurant, your waiter wanders off. You're right. At a restaurant, waiter wanders off with your credit card. That could be it. Lots of ways your card can be stolen. A key logger is a little bit of an elaborate thing. I suspect that's not the case. But these skimmers are absolutely a problem. So this is a good, and there's other things like skimmers called shimmers, and that's a shim. And there's all sorts of things that you can do to kind of pay attention. And if you get your credit card stolen each time you use a particular place, yeah, that's one of the reasons Android or Apple Pay is a really good way to go. Touch to pay isn't susceptible to skimmers. Good God, Leo LaPointe, the hottest working tech guy in show business. 8888 Ask Leo. That's the phone number. That's one reason I like Touch to Pay. You know, this credit card skimmer issue is a big issue. We're seeing more and more of these. They're not hard to make. They're cheap. They're hard to detect. And bad guys will put them on. They're just, what's wrong with this world? These people just put them anywhere. And so that anywhere that you're swiping or sticking in a credit card to pay at a gas pump or an ATM, there's always the potential that there's some hardware, a little bit of hardware, sometimes a shim, sometimes a whole replacement that is reading the card. Still, all the credit cards still work, right? The gas pump still works. The ATM still works. It's just a secondary device that's capturing the credit card information as you use it. And they're all over the place. I'll put a link in the show notes to a recent article from PC Magazine about how it works, how to detect it. But that's what I love about things like Apple Pay or Android Pay, where you just touch the screen. Those are not susceptible to the same kind of attacks. And even if they were, you're not giving the credit card number to the gas station or the ATM or anywhere. You're giving them a token, which isn't really useful to the bad guy in any way. He can't be reusing your token. So it's a really good system. I think it's one of the reasons we're moving to it. And of course, Apple supports it with the Apple Watch and the iPhone. Most Android phones support Android Pay. Using NFC, you just tap it on things. I use it as often as I can. It protects privacy. It's more secure. There are a lot of really good reasons to use it, if you can. David in Arvin, California. Hi, David. Leo LaPointe, the tech guy.
Hey, how you doing, Leo?
I'm great. How are you, David?
All right. Cowabunga, dude.
Cowabunga.
California. Yes. Surf's up, man.
Are you a surfer, David?
I am, even at my age.
That's
awesome. I'm a senior, and I'm a Vietnam era veteran, but I still get out there and
love it.
And do it. Yeah.
There's something magic about the ocean, isn't there?
There really is. Yeah. It really is.
I feel like it's where we all came from. There's just something about going to the ocean where you just feel like this is where we belong. This is where I belong.
Yeah. We all end up back there somehow.
Somehow.
But, yeah.
So what can I do for you, David?
Okay. The thing I got in the mail the other day was a little brochure. And it reads as this: the world's easiest to use computer, designed especially for seniors, because I am of the geese nowadays.
Of the geese. Cowabunga, dude! who would have thought Dobie Gillis would be a senior citizen by now? I mean, after
holy smoke, I know, huh? How about that?
How did that happen? How did that happen, David? I don't get it. So what is the name of this senior computer? Does it have a name?
Okay. The name that I got here is called First Street for Boomers and Beyond.
First Streak? Like
FirstStreet.
First Street. Oh, yes. First Street. Uh-huh. Okay.
Right. It says easy to set up, easy to read, easy to use. Just plug it in.
Yeah, First Street sells a lot of stuff for us old folks.
I know. Yeah.
So I've seen a number of computers for seniors. They're actually selling the Wow, which I have played with, W-O-W. And I do kind of like this. So the Wow computer is, don't tell anybody, it's a Linux computer. It's not Windows, and it's not Mac. And actually, I think that's a good thing because you have a very simple button interface.
Right.
It has a browser, and it has emails. It has video chat. It has a lot of the things that you use in it. Here's my problem with it. Now, first of all, what are they charging for this? I think it's $1,000, right?
I don't even know. I
think it's expensive.
Yet,
I think it's $1,000. I can't remember if the Wow requires you to subscribe to an additional service, but it may. And here's the thing. It's not a standard. It's only made by and supported by this one company, Wow.
I
think their heart's in the right place. I mean, it's as if you had a neighbor or a family member who said, hey, Dad, I'm going to make a computer that's really easy for you to use. And they put buttons in a menu and stuff. And that would be great, except that you need that kid to always be around to tell you if something goes wrong. You have the same problem with this. And the thing is, this is not a big company. Here's what I'm going to recommend instead. It'll be less expensive.
Okay.
And it's standard. It's called a Chrome. Now, there's different kinds of Chrome OS computers. There's the Chromebook for laptop. If you want, this one's an all-in-one. So they also make Chrome all-in-one computers running Chrome OS. And the way this works is, first of all, it'll be half as much. It's also running on Linux, but it's a standard. And it's supported by Google and many other companies. And I think it's much more secure.
Yeah.
It is updated all the time. You're going to get all the benefits of the Wow computer. So what you're looking for is something called a Chrome Base.
Chrome Base.
If you look on Amazon, Acer has a Chrome Base that's even bigger than the one they're offering. It's a 24-inch screen. $448.
Oh, okay.
It's more secure. It's a standard. It's supported by Google. There are a lot of people who can help you with it, and you don't have to just go back to Wow. So there are a lot of good choices out there. I would search for a Chrome Base. It'll be very similar in the form to this Wow computer. But in my opinion, it's going to be more standard and better supported. And if you want to,
The thing is, I used to have cable and all the other stuff, but I don't have any internet link up.
This wouldn't be of any use to you without the internet. Neither the Wow computer nor the Chrome Base. So you'd have to consider in the cost. adding a monthly cost for high-speed internet, $20, $30 a month.
Oh, okay. All
so
right.
If you
so
can't
that would be added to the...
Yeah, if you can't afford that, the computer doesn't do anything without a connection. A computer, these days, computers have changed a lot from when you and I were younger, where they were, you know, you'd run software, they would be kind of standalone. Now, thanks to the internet, they're more communication devices than anything.
Oh,
and
okay.
Most of the features in that WoW computer, the web browser, the video conferencing, require an internet connection.
Okay.
Same with the Chromebook.
So I'd have to contact maybe like an AT&T.
Yeah,
or,
call, your phone company will offer. We have a sponsor for many years. We had a sponsor called DSL Extreme. They have very low-cost, high-speed internet plans. They come in, they install everything. You wouldn't have to do anything. And that would work very well with either the WoW computer or with the Chrome base. But I would prefer to see you get a Chrome base. I think that you're going to – I think you're going to love it. But, you know, go try it. Go to a Best Buy or somewhere and try it before you buy it. I think these are really good. Or even go to your library and try one there. Libraries usually have internet access. In fact, that's the cheapest way to do it. It's what the public library has become, really. The books are secondary nowadays. It's internet access is the most important thing. So I bet you if you go down to the Arvin Public Library, they'll have some internet stations, computers hooked up to the internet. They have support, and you can try it and see if there's stuff you would like to do. I think that's maybe even a better choice. And you can get a book on the way home. 8888-ASK-LEO. You know I'm a fan of Chrome OS. I really feel like it's more secure, it's easier to use, and it does most of what people want to do. Surf the net, buy things online if that's what you want to do, get email, stay in touch with friends and family. It'll do texting, it'll do all that stuff, and I think it's a really great way to go. And there's some really nice Chrome books are the laptops. Chrome boxes connect to your own screen, keyboard and mouse, and then the Chrome bases are the all-in-ones. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. We are all young Americans. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888 Ask Leo. As I mentioned, I'm going to keep answering questions for another hour. So please keep the phone calls coming, 8888 Ask Leo. The show ends in about 15 minutes, but I will keep going because we're recording ahead. Because I like to give you fresh content every week. So we're recording ahead for vacation time. 8888 Ask Leo. Your questions here. Dan from Washington State. Hello, Dan. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Leo, how are you today?
I am well. How are you?
Well, since you played Dusty Springfield, and we do have a Quicken Loan, you are absolute top-notch guy.
I'm right in there. I'm right in there, right reading your mind.
That's right. Leo, I had, it's gone now, but I had a combination VCR DVD player.
It's long gone, and, yes.
And loved it, and I want to buy another one.
Your attachment to physical media is much appreciated by garage sale owners everywhere.
It's because I have a lot of both, and they're anyway.
Yep.
The issue was, and it bugged me. You know, I'd have the DVD on, and it'd come up, and the screen would be nice and bright and blue in the background and all that. If I switched over to the VCR or the VHS side. The brightness dropped about 20%. And that always kind of bugged me, you know, a little bit. I asked my brother, he's sort of a tech guy, but not as good as you. And he said it's because the VHS side.
Oh, no. Did his battery die? We may never know why. Are you still there? He dropped out.
The technology hasn't.
There he is. I missed it. Why is it? Did your brother said that the VHS is dimmer?
Because the technology in the VHS side is not as advanced as the VCR.
Yeah, that's actually a nice way to put it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
How would you put it?
I mean, technically the brightness should be pretty similar. There is a vast difference between the quality of a VHS recording and a DVD recording. So VHS is standard definition. Actually, technically, so is the DVD. That's not a high. Is it a high def? I guess you can get a high def. No, that's a Blu-ray player. So, here's the biggest difference is that VHS is an analog recording. Are you using homemade VHSs or are you using commercial VHSs?
Commercial.
commercial tapes. Okay. So they're an analog recording, usually about 400 lines of resolution. That's the, you know, nowadays you'd call it dots, but it isn't in the case of TV. It's lines of resolution. And it's also interlaced. So the way television used to work, because the cathode ray tubes, we're going back in time now a little bit. Cathode ray tubes were slow and they couldn't draw 400 lines at a time. So they would draw 200 lines, 200 odd lines, and then they would draw they would then come all the way back and draw 200 even lines. And over 60 times a second, they would do that. And over those 60 times, they'd get 30 full images. You see why your brother's answer is better than mine? You see, this is very complicated. 30 full images of what we call interlaced video. Those might be, in fact, a little dimmer because, you know, it's thinking about a cathode ray tube and the fact that the phosphors on an old style TV glow for a while, right? And they hold the image so they can draw half the image. The phosphors from that first half are still glowing, and then they go back, draw the second half, and together they're roughly full brightness. The problem is you're not watching on a cathode ray tube, are you? You're watching on an LCD flat panel TV, probably.
Correct.
And it is not interlaced. It is 60 frames per second progressive scan. So in other words, it is drawing all 60 lines at once. I would bet that's one of the reasons it's dimmer. It's only 400 lines of resolution. The DVD is 480 lines of resolution. The DVD is probably progressive. The VHS is probably still interlaced, even though it's on a progressive view capable TV. So what you're getting on your TV is what they call 480i. What you're getting from your DVD is 480p, and it would be brighter. It would certainly look better, be higher quality. So it's probably not a miscalibration, although a good VHS player should handle this. A modern VHS player, I think, should handle it. There is a brightness that picture expects to be, and that's the brightness you should get on no matter what screen you're using. So you're going to go out and buy a new one. If you buy a good one and you buy I see they're still sold, amazingly enough. They're still sold. Amazon has quite a few. The most expensive one, a Magnavox, is $617. The least expensive, a Magnavox, is $100. That may be one of the differences in price right there, is how well it handles things like differences in brightness. So I'm just guessing, but your brother's answer is the actual answer, which is, well, it's old-style technology and it doesn't look as good. See, I gave you the long, crazy answer. Did it make sense?
It did. I'm not sure I understood all of it. But.
it really goes back. We didn't know any better, but I got to tell you, television looked terrible in the old days on that old cathode ray tube with the half the lines drawn at a time interlaced. It was awful. And the way you know that is if you take an old, and you could do this on a DVD, but if you take an old SD TV show and you put it on a nice high-res screen, you'll see how blurry and smeary and bad it is. It just doesn't look good. The only reason they don't look horrible is because most modern TVs, this may also be a way to fix this, most modern TVs process the signal and they say, oh, we're only getting an interlaced signal. Let's de-interlace it and make it look better and upscale it and make it look crisper. And so if you watch I Love Lucy DVDs, they actually look okay. Because your TV or your DVD player is doing a better job of upscaling it. So that would be the other thing, is there's actually hardware in that player that is improving the picture before it goes out. VHS doesn't have that capability.
Gotcha. Well, I'll just go buy one and take what I can get.
Hope you get good results.
I do too.
Yeah, I mean, it's such an old school way of watching. I had a friend who recorded each and every Cheers episode. He had a closet full of VHS tapes. And I'm thinking back to this poor guy. I know he loved the show, but you could just watch it on Netflix every single episode for free in much higher quality.
Or you could buy the DVDs on eBay.
Or get the DVDs or Blu-ray. And you know what's happening, though, is even those have been replaced by ultra-high-def 4K Blu-ray, and frankly, Even those aren't going to be around much longer because people don't even want physical media. They don't want tapes. They don't want discs. They just want to stream it over the internet. And to be honest, that streamed Cheers episode looks 10 times better than the one my poor friend has in his closet on VHS tapes. 100 times better. It's not even close. Anyway, I'm glad you're listening. That was really far more detail than you require, I'm sure. But thank you for asking. I'm going to give up now. I like your brother's answer. Well, honestly, Don, it's just older technology. Of course. Hey, thanks to Michael Cozio, our musical director, Kim Schaffer, for answering the phone. Stay on the phone. We're going to answer more calls for the next 45 minutes. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Have a great geek week. Well, that's it for the Tech Guy show for today. Thank you so much for being here. And don't forget, TWIT, T-W-I-T. It stands for This Week in Tech, and you'll find it at twit.tv, including the podcasts for this show. We talk about Windows on Windows Weekly, Macintosh on Mac Break Weekly, iPads, iPhones, Apple Watches on iOS Today, security on Security Now. I mean, I can go on and on and on. And, of course, the big show every Sunday afternoon, This Week in Tech. You'll find it all at twit.tv. And I'll be back next week with another great Tech Guys show. Thanks for joining me. We'll see you next time.